Well, I am so excited today. We talked to a beautiful woman of God, Teresa Shields Parker, in December, and talked to her about her amazing story and all the things that God has brought her through and taught her about her health. Teresa Shields Parker, we welcome you again to Views from the Heart. Thank you so much for being willing to come back and share more of your story and more of what you've learned about God's idea of our health.
I'm just really happy to be here.
Well, Teresa, you are someone who lost 250 pounds. Just give us, can you give us just a rundown, you know, how did this occur? And just start out with growing up. Have you had a weight issue all your life? And what did you try to do to get rid of that weight loss, the weight issue?
I think the better question is, what have I not tried to do? I've pretty much tried everything. I've pretty much done every diet imaginable, the latest thing that would come out, you know, hey, let's try that. Why not? You know, let's go on Weight Watchers. Let's go on Diet Center. Let's go on Action Site. Let's just do them all. Even to the point of gastric bypass surgery. I did that one too. I thought that would be the granddaddy fix of them all.
Yes.
And, you know, I did lose weight on gastric bypass, but when I realized I could start eating sugar again, which was about a year after I lost weight, I did it. I started eating sugar again because I was really angry about not being able to eat sugar after I had the gastric bypass. I wanted to do it so that it would fix me. It would fix this craving, but it didn't fix it. It just made me not able to eat it, but I still craved it. I loved food growing up. That was a big centerpiece of our family, especially mm-hmm. our extended family. And anytime we would go to grandma's, anytime we would have any kind of birthday or holiday or celebration, it was very much centered around food. And it was the good, you know, Southern home cooking food, country food, you know, lots of potatoes, lots of gravy, lots of desserts, lots of breaded and fried food. And I just love that. And that signified comfort to me. So as I grew up, you know, as a kid, I was active. So I didn't gain as much weight. I tended to be like a size or two above the grade level I was in. I always felt fat mm-hmm. Because, you know, as a first grader, I might look like a third grader. Okay. But when you look at a picture of me, you don't see a chubby child. But then when I got out on my own and when I started, when I became an adult and got less active, the weight, started to really come on as I continued to eat like I had grown up eating, all of the comfort stuff and all of that kind of thing, especially when I'd be away from, like, my grandmother and that kind of thing, when I'd be living in a place where I couldn't see her as much. You know, food, those kinds of food would remind me of her and remind me of the comfort I got from that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Holy Spirit brings us comfort, but I hadn't connected the dots. I hadn't connected that, you know, I could get comfort from him the same way I could, you know, in a better way than what you can get from food. But it hadn't hit my brain yet. It hadn't hit my experience yet, I guess you might say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Teresa, I identify with that because, especially, I think, just going through Christmas and missing my mom's things my mom would not naturally make, you know, at Christmas time, old recipes and things. And things were a little bit different this year at Christmas time for food wise. But, you know, I found myself still missing and coming home and wanting to make fruitcake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wanting to make my mom's fruitcake. Wanting to make mince pie because we didn't have mince pie. Wanting to make certain things. I ended up not doing it, but I really, really wanted to. So it's so much emotion involved with dealing with our weight, isn't it? More than we realize.
And I think it's, and on some level, it was like I was going to be dishonoring my grandmother if I went a different way with eating. If my grandmother was still here today, she would be applauding me. She was one of the ones that kept saying, on one hand, she would say, oh, honey, you need to lose some weight. You would feel much better if you could lose some weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 minutes later, hey, there's oatmeal cookies here, I bake. You know?
Yes, like, yes.
Okay, wait a minute. This is messing with my brain. You know, I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
Quite what to do. But, you know, our family, too, this year, my brother has lost 100 pounds. My
wow.
sister is starting on this journey as well. My son has lost 60. My daughter has lost 20. I mean, our Christmas dinner was very different this year, and yet we focused on the thing that was most important. We focused on Jesus, and we focused on each other. And my daughter teaches English in Japan, so she's been there for 9 months. So this was the first time we'd seen her in 9 months, and I have a niece in North Carolina. It's been a while since we'd seen her, and this was the first time our family had been together, all together in a long time, and that was the focus, and mm-hmm. that was so good, to not have food as the focus.
Mm. Hard, it must be a little bit of a hard adjustment, though, if you're used to that, if that's, because it's also part of the holidays for, I think, everybody. But we're talking to Teresa Shields Parker, author of Sweet Grace. Teresa, we do have a caller. Bob?
My question has to do with something I've been reading about extensively, and it's the impact of stress upon people's lives. And what are your comments about the role of stress in your struggles?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. That's interesting because my subtitle on my book is How I Lost 250 Pounds and Stopped Trying to Earn God's Favor. And so my whole issue, part of my issue when I was an adult and I was gaining weight was, okay, I can't do anything about my weight, but I can do all of this work for God. And surely all of the donuts I ate will be negated by the number of good stories that I write that are sharing the message of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it was kind of it was a self-induced spiritual stress.
Yes.
If that makes sense. It was a doing. It was always a doing. And I would get caught up in this cycle of, I've got to do this. And then I would get overwhelmed because I wasn't getting the gratitude or the recognition I thought I should get from doing this. And I wasn't feeling God's pleasure on it. And so then I would eat to give that comfort back. And so it's this endless cycle of difficulty. I talk about that a lot in my book. And I talk about a dream I had one time where I saw God and what I feel like he was saying to me. And then I see it later after I've lost weight and I understand my interpretation was not the right interpretation, that God wasn't mad at me for what I was doing. He was sad because I hadn't caught on to the fact that all he wanted was me. He didn't want my doing. He wanted my being. But I can tell you this, overwhelm is still a slippery slope for me. When I start feeling myself stressed out or overwhelmed, I know I have to step back. And for my health, I have to step back or I'll step into something that's going to be unhealthy for me.
What's your dream? And I'll tell you mine.
Bob, we're going to hold you right there. Give Teresa a minute to think about that. And when we come back, we'll find out what Teresa's dream is. And I think, Teresa, the question was, what is your dream?
My dream is to be a whole, healthy, happy woman of God, administering grace and truth in a powerful way. And the specifics of that dream have to do with the gift that I believe God has given me in the area of writing and making a difference in others' lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this book definitely is going to make a huge difference in many people's lives. I don't think we think of sugar as a potential addiction. I really,
right.
You know, that's not something people think about. That's not something that I don't think any weight loss, you know, like Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig or anything, I don't think they talk about it being an addiction. I don't think anybody's talking about it.
Well, there are a few places that are talking about it. You know, I've done some research after I made the decision to be sugar. After God told me I was a sugar addict, really made it plain and clear to me. And it was just like, wow, you know, if an alcoholic can get free from alcohol, you know, get free by mm-hmm. not drinking alcohol, maybe I'm a sugar addict and I could get free from by just not eating sugar. Mm-hmm. It really had never occurred to me before. And so I thought, I have tried everything else. God had told me for years, starting back in 1977, when I would cry out to him and I would ask, how can I get rid of this issue, this mountain of flesh? And I have it in my journals at least 5 times throughout the years where he would answer me back and he would say, stop eating sugar, eat more lean meats, more fruits, more vegetables, and stop eating so much bread. And I would write down what I thought he had said to me, and that would be the substance, and it was the same all throughout the years. So, you know, remembering that, and I just thought, okay, well, maybe what I thought I couldn't do, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can turn it around with his help if he's telling me to do it. And so I just started in that direction. And so experientially, I can tell you that it is a true addiction, because when I was so overweight, I would just crave sugar all the time. Mm-hmm. I would have just eaten lunch or supper, and there would be, you know, something sweet there on the counter, and I couldn't leave it alone. I would come back and eat the rest of it, you know?
Yep.
But when the issue is, it's just like an alcoholic, and there's a lot of correlation between sugar and alcohol. Alcohol is essentially liquid sugar. Mm-hmm. That was my first indication. Hey, there is a big correlation here. Several books out now are talking about this whole issue. Mm-hmm. Why We Get Fat by Gary Tobbs talks about it a great deal. A book that's fairly old was talking about it maybe even 10 years ago is Potatoes Not Prozac. These are all secular books, but they're out there and they're talking about this particular issue of sugar addiction. And, you know, just recently I read an article about how sugar relates a great deal to cancer. It feeds cancer.
Yes,
cells.
Exactly. It feeds the cancer, yes.
It is making us, it's killing us, and we just don't understand it. I have a firm conviction, and I don't know, I'm not basing this on anything necessarily that I've read. I'm just basing it on where I was at and how this journey of laying the sugar down, really laying it on the altar, and just telling the Lord, okay, I'm living a fasted lifestyle from now on. I'm doing it for you. I'm doing it to be healthy. I'm doing it to be able to be used in your kingdom and be the woman that you designed me to be. But, you know, doing that has propelled me forward. And I know that those who are extremely overweight, if they will just take this journey and lay it down and not pick it up again. And if they do accidentally pick it up or, you know, slip at some time, to not keep going back in that direction, but, you know, turn around and go the right way and don't just, you know, stay stuck there, because I would do that kind of thing too. If you get rid of the sugar, if you're not eating the sugar, there will be a time when you don't crave it, when you don't want it. I can say this year, at this holiday, I did not want sugar at all.
Teresa, I have to ask, it's hard. Like, for example, I'm sitting here, I'm over the flu, but I'm still having trouble with, you know, the breathing and all that. And so I'm eating a Hall's cough drop, which has sugar in it.
Yeah.
And a lot of our medications, a lot of our cough medicines and everything has sugar in it as well. Is it possible to get away from even that sugar? I'm asking kind of a crazy question, but I'm looking at this going, oh my gosh, well, I'm feeding my sugar habit.
You know, here's what I've realized. There are things like salad dressings that have sugar in them. That's
right.
The one that I really battle a lot. How do I, you know, I can make my own salad dressing, but if I'm out at a restaurant or something, how do I do that? You can ask for oil and vinegar, stuff like that, or you can just not eat it, salad dressing at all. But, you know, sometimes you need something to make it more palatable.
Yes.
But you can look for it. You can search for it. But the other thing is, if you start popping cough drops like pieces of candy,
right,
you know that it's not for the cough drop benefit that you're eating it. It's for the candy.
Right.
And so your brain has to be in tune with, why am I eating this and what is the reason? And, you know, is it going back to an addiction or not? Some things that have sugar in it, you know, may not pull you.
Right.
If you, it's, it's different kinds of things. You almost have to test the waters. But I really believe for the first year or so, if you can be as much sugar-free as possible, and I'm talking processed sugar, processed and refined sugar, because I still will eat, I eat raw honey. I didn't do that for the first year or two. I've just started doing that and finding that it's okay for me to do that. It's not addictive to me. But there's something in processed and refined sugar and processed and refined flours that are, that really mess with our systems. And you can, more than half of Americans are overweight or obese or morbidly obese. More than half. It's a really big percentage. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's a lot more than half. So the majority of us are overweight. The majority of us have this issue. And you look at foreign countries, and they don't have this issue, and their eating style is totally different. What they eat is different from us. So there's something that we're eating that's not right, and we have to understand that, like, restaurants and grocery stores and stuff are going to serve us what we want. And I have a brother-in-law who's a manager of a restaurant, and he says, you know, we serve healthy stuff on our menu, but we sell very little of it. They don't come here for that. They come here for, you know, what we're known for, which is
the high fat, high sugar,
good old country cooking, you know?
Oh, and how we love that good old country cooking. And Teresa, you know, we can know all this in our heads, and maybe it's because so many of us are addicted to sugar. How do we change our mindset about the way we eat?
That's a really good question. It's one I'm asked a lot. How do I change my mind? Because I do believe that's the key. Is to change our mind. I just think we have to set a course towards health, and we have to realize that changing our mind is an easy thing. We do it all the time. We change our mind about you know, what we wear, what we're going to eat for lunch. All kinds of things we change our mind about, but we don't tend to want to change our mind about the things that really matter. So getting down to the core of what we're doing and why we're doing and facing the issue head on is, I think, the first step, as we realize this is where I'm at. And then, you know, we renew our mind. We change our thoughts and our actions, and we go towards what we know is healthy and what is the right thing to do. We understand that with God's help, we have all the power in the world to go through and to make this work. We just have to hold on tight to Him, and we have to be strong. We have to realize that the comfort, it's not about our bodies. It's not about what makes us, you know, feel good or what tastes good or, you know, I just can't help it. I want it, you know. Well, you have to realize there's a bigger issue here. You know, there's your life at stake. If you're not concerned about your life, are you concerned about what God wants for you? And, you know, the beauty of it is the connection that comes when you're walking in obedience. There's just a special connection that happens when you have laid down that last piece that's standing between you and God.
It's funny. I think we can live our lives, you know, thinking, yes, I'm walking with the Lord. Yes, I'm following His directions, and totally miss certain areas like this that we don't make important in our lives, but is excruciatingly important in our lives. And God keeps trying to give us those messages. And yet, you know, at least I'm speaking from how I'm feeling personally, you know, about this. So, you know, if you're feeling differently out there, you're listening to this, I would love to hear your aspect of this. But I feel like we forget how powerful a God we serve, how powerful a God we walk with every day, and how powerful He is to influence what we want and what we don't want.
And we listen to the power of the air. That's what we listen to.
Yes.
The power of the air is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's on, you know, it's in television commercials, it's as we drive by a restaurant, it's, you know, it's everywhere. It's not just in what we hear and what we see, but, you know, it's in what we think and what what we want and all of that kind of stuff, we're listening to the wrong voice.
Oh,
especially
yeah.
when it comes to our bodies, we're listening to the wrong voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why. I try to evaluate myself. Why was it that for so many years I was working in ministry? I was a Christian. I was studying the Bible. I was reading the Word daily. I was close to God. I loved Him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, whenever He would talk to me about this issue, I would just say, "I can't do that. I can't do it." And I just had a huge roadblock where this was concerned. But you know, when I finally had done everything that I could do on my own and that man's interventions could do,
mm-hmm.
that's when I realized, okay, if you're going to carry out your assignment here on this earth, something has to happen differently. You got to have a God intervention, and that's not surgery. I thought it was surgery.
Yes.
I thought that was my God intervention. That wasn't it, you know?
Yeah.
It was doing it God's way, which is walking it out. Step by step. And I mean, that's how we learn. That's how we learn.
Exactly.
I believe that's why we have such major weaknesses in our life.
Mm-hmm.
It's to learn that God has the power to help us overcome it.
Exactly.
It's interesting that I was talking with someone the other day who has just started this journey. And she said, you know, you're right. I'm not really pulled towards sugar. It's not as hard as I thought it was going to be. You know, she said, I may have that come up later, but right now, you know, I'm doing okay. I've realized now, I've set my mind to realize this is not a short-term thing. This is for the rest of my life. This is for my health, for my husband's health. You know, this is so we can live and be healthy and be productive and be, you know, a part of God's kingdom here on earth. And, you know, this short-term kind of thing, like I'm going to go on a diet for, you know, even 6 months and lose the weight, and then I can eat whatever I want, that's the wrong mindset. That will never get you where
right.
you want to go.
Right. It's a lifestyle change.
Yes.
It's a lifestyle change with help from our Heavenly Father who is just waiting to help us with this, supernaturally even helping us with this. And Teresa, I want to ask you about fasting. You know, from my personal experience, boy, I share a lot personally here on right on the air, and it's okay. If it helps somebody, that's great, because it sometimes helps me talking it out, going, wow, Allison, you're an idiot. But you know how my thinking is not quite kosher. It's not quite with God on this. But usually when, like, we have a corporate fast with my church, and I always, every single year, give up sugar for a week. Every single year, I give up any kind of sugar, candy cakes, you know, any processed sugar. I stay totally away from it for a week. And yet I always find myself, I always think, okay, you know what, Lord, I really want to do this for, just continue this. But eventually I add in, you know, suddenly I'm at somebody's house, they have fresh baked cookies, can't resist, have a cookie. And I'm right back into it. Would you consider this something, in a sense, are we fasting? If we are giving up something strictly for God, do we consider it more of a fast? Does that help?
You know, yeah, I wondered that same issue. I asked a speaker that we had at our church who talked about fasting, if that could be a possibility as I was on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And he really didn't know, but as I thought God about it, I really feel like for me it is a fasted lifestyle. It helps me personally to look at it that way. When I'm tempted to eat sugar, no, I'm not going to, because I want to be healthy, because I want to complete my assignment here on earth. I'm doing this for God. I laid this on the altar. I surrendered the thing that I had really put above God when you
mm-hmm.
come right down to
oh,
it.
Oh, yes. Oh yeah,
and you know, because I wanted it. I'm working on a book. I'm calling Hungry: Developing an Appetite for God, because that's you know, I didn't have the kind of appetite for God that I had for sweets and sugars and all of that kind of stuff. I just didn't.
Right.
And so I think looking at it in that way is a good way. I don't know if it's the true meaning of a fast. That's, you know, because a fast was for a limited amount of time, usually it wasn't a long-term thing, But I just look at it like I'm living a fasted lifestyle. That's the way that not everyone is addicted to sugar, just like not everyone
right.
is addicted to alcohol.
Okay.
If you can look at your family history, you can think about how many people in my family are overweight, how many people in my family have diabetes, have heart disease, or have any of the kind of things that even cancer that might indicate some kind of issue with sugar or, you know, at least with excessive food. And then you can also look at how many people in my life, in my family history, are alcoholics or had some kind of alcohol issue. I had alcohol on one side of my family and obesity on the other side.
Mm.
So when I looked at that, when I read that kind of way to look at it, I realized, wow, I really do have a lot of genetic propensities towards this.
Would you consider a stronghold within your family?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the way
definitely.
You break a stronghold is you walk out in obedience.
Amen.
There's no way to, like, pray off a stronghold.
Right.
You do it by turning the other way and walking away from it and saying to the strong man, no, I will not go there because I am a child of obedience. And you say that over and over and over again. And pretty soon he realizes, okay, she means business. I don't want to mess with her no more because I'm going to go mess with somebody else.
Oh, Teresa, we got a break for a second, but I just want to make sure that you know you can join us at any time in this conversation. Incredible stuff. I mean, I feel like God is just really opening some doors for, hopefully for you as you're listening. He certainly is opening them for me and for my friend, where we're both saying we can do this, we can encourage each other. And what does, you know, you the name of your book, God's Grace, what does God's grace have to do with weight loss, Teresa?
You know, I heard a definition of grace the other day from Chris Ballison of Bethel Church, and
mm-hmm.
I like this definition. Grace is the operational power of God to do what you couldn't do 1 second before. And
say that again.
Grace is the operational power of God to do what you couldn't do 1 second before.
Oh, wow. To do what you couldn't do 1 second before.
Yeah, isn't that awesome? Because that is really true. I realized that grace was not just something I did when I was seven, that wasn't, you know, I never heard of grace as anything else rather than what happens at salvation. I didn't know what the total ramifications of grace could be. The fact that grace propels you forward when you start in the right direction, it just empowers you. It is why God gave us grace, so that we don't have to stay in guilt and shame. So I wondered this, why did God say, give us grace for our sins, past, present, and future, when we were saved? He did that because he wanted us not to stay in shame and guilt. He knew our human tendencies. He knew we would mess up. And yet he gave us grace for the propelling forward, even when we mess up. But so many times we wallow in the shame and the guilt,
yeah.
And we can't move forward. And so repenting and going forward is the way, you know, to receive grace. And repenting is not just, oh, yeah, I messed up, I'm sorry. It's not that. It's, I messed up, I'm not going there again, I'm turning around, I'm going the other way. It's making a plan, an action plan, to actually take care of that issue rather than just, oh, yeah, I've got grace, so I can go to God and I can get forgiven. Well, yes, you can get forgiven. But, you know, if you're just spinning your wheels there, you're not really, really taking advantage of grace
mm-hmm.
the way that he meant it, you know, for us
mm-hmm.
to have. So, and, you know, this goes for, it's not just sugar. It goes for anything. Pornography is a
yeah.
big issue.
Yeah.
I got an email from a ministry leader. I had an article in Spirit-Led Woman magazine, and they shared it in the Charisma email at Blast thing that goes out. That was the first week in January, and I got an email back from a ministry leader who is addicted to pornography and talked about how he's, you know, got an accountability group and he's trying to overcome this. But his last statement to me was, I can only hope that I can find the freedom you have found through obedience. And that last statement bothered me so much because it was, the hope was like wishful thinking.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't like the secure hope we have in Jesus. I wrote a blog post called, when hope is hopeless, you know, because that is really what it seemed like to me, that that's where a lot of us are in any of our addictions, with food, with alcohol, with cigarettes, with drugs, with pornography, with anything, even television. I mean, anything, work, anything that we put above God and that we think we have to have and we can't live without can become an addiction.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, what is your parting thing that you would like people to know?
I would just like them to know that whatever thing is pulling them away from God, they just need to lay it down, and He is ready with open arms to receive them and to comfort them and propel them forward into whatever it is that they were designed to do. He just loves people so much. I'd also like for everyone to be able to connect with me on my website, TeresaShieldsParker.com, and on my Facebook page, Teresa Shields Parker Writer, and then go and check out the book on Amazon. It's there, or it's on my website as well. So
wonderful. That's TeresaShieldsParker.com. And then you said your email is Teresa Shields Parker Writer?
No, my Facebook page. And I do a lot of posting on that page about weight loss.
Yes.
I'd love for you to join me there.
Yes, wonderful. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us. And when your next book comes out, Hungry, having an appetite for God, I would love to talk to you about that as well on air.